Welcome to Coffee with the Sarlows. We are your hosts of the show, Karen and Kelly Sarlo. Whether you're struggling with grief or you just need answers, we connect you with spirit to find relief, clarity, and direction in life. We can help you move forward.
Hi, Kelly.
Good morning.
Good morning. I have a little bit of a show today that can challenge people's beliefs. And I'm hoping that it will, in fact.
So just a regular coffee with the Sarlows? The fuck?
Okay.
Surprise, we're going to challenge your belief systems.
That's a true statement. I don't know how come I thought this was unique.
Me neither.
Okay. So
I'm sure it'll be a great show. I just don't know why this would be any different.
That's true. Okay. So the client's made up name is Lua.
Okay.
Yeah. And she starts the beginning of the session and says, "Do you think that you can get in touch with my brother for me?" And I said, "I will do my best, Lua. Let's see what comes through." So I turned to my left, which is usually where all the information comes in for me. And I said, "Are you there?" And a man says to me, "I am. And I'm going to appear as a grown man." And I said, "Oh, okay. So what happened when you died? Were you a kid?" And he goes, "No, I was a stillbirth."
Mm.
Yeah. And I said, "Okay." I said, "Continue telling me whatever you want and I'll give the information to Lua." And he says, "Our mom was about seven to seven and a half months pregnant when she delivered him as a stillbirth, and that he was the oldest of seven children total, and that I could start with that, that she would like to hear some of that as just the pure facts." And I said, "Okay." So I told Lua that, and she said, "Yes." She said, "This is excellent. Thank you." And she says to me, "I am writing notes," and she says, "and I am recording the session." She says, "Because I have a whole bunch of questions I want to ask." And she says, "If you don't go through and answer all the questions, will you give me time to make sure that I go through my questions?" And I said, "Well, yes, we can do a combination of both for sure." She goes, "Well, I want you to go first to see which questions are left at the end." She says, "And I'm curious about that, like how much he's going to answer and how much he's going to know what I want to know about him." I said, "That sounds like fun. Let's give it a try." So then I went back to her brother and I said, "What else do you want to say?" He says, "Well, I'm here with one of our sisters." And he says, "But the rest are on earth with Lua." And he says, "And my sister, our sister, passed as an adult well into her 40s. So she was not a miscarriage or stillbirth, abortion, a child, a baby, anything like that." He said, "I'm the stillbirth, but she died in her 40s. So I said, "Okay, do you have anything else to say?" He goes, "Yeah." He says, "I can tell you some more things about my sister." He said, "I've told you a little bit about me and there's not a whole lot else I can say about me because I didn't have a life on earth." And he says, "So I'm going to tell you a lot about my sister and I'm going to tell you about our parents." He says, "So I want to begin by saying my sister has her own children and her own grandchildren. And she has stepchildren and she has step-grandchildren, and that she has had three marriages, and that the third marriage she's currently in, and that the first two men died. She was widowed twice."
Whoa.
Yeah.
What a life.
Yeah. And he says, "So I want her to know that I know her husband's. And that they're here with me on the other side with our sister. I want her to hear that." And I said, "Well, hey, are your mom and dad there too?" And he goes, "Yes." I said, "Well, I'm going to say all of that to her then so that she'll know who's on earth, who's on the other side with you." And I said, did your parents pass before you? Did your dad pass before you?" I couldn't ask that about the mom because obviously she lost him as a stillbirth. And I said, "But was your dad alive or not?" And he said, "No, my dad lived for many years after." And he says, after I passed, he says, well, yes, because he had more children with the mom. But then, anyway, there was complications with the his own mom's life and other partners as well. So we had to sort between how many marriages Lua has and their mom had. Mm-hmm. They each had more than one. Mm-hmm. So Lua's life ends up being very much similar in many ways as to how many marriages and children and stepchildren and step-grandchildren that her mom has. So we go through and we describe Lewis to her. And then I explained, oh, your life is very much like your mom's in all of the regards of the family dynamics. And then she says to me, that's very correct. She says, it really is, Karen. So she was so excited about that. So you could see her with her pen and her paper, and she's ticking things off as I'm saying all of this to her. That because she's trying to see, did he know about my grandkids? Did he know about my children? Did he know about my marriages? Does he know which marriage I'm in and which number it is and all of this kind of stuff? So she's checking it off. And she goes, okay, just you're doing so great. She goes, you just continue. I'm just going to continue. I love this idea of open. It's meeting a lot of my needs. I've still got questions, but I'd like to hear more. So then her brother says to me, she's very much like my mom and dad. She's very much like our parents in that our parents were very intelligent people. And he says now they were educated people. So they did go to school and get an education. Both my parents were professionals. He said they both had long careers, but he says, and they both valued emotional intelligence. They both valued spirituality. They valued learning and constantly being curious about hobbies, about creativity, about sports, about nutrition. He said, my mom and dad really looked at every single aspect of life as a way to learn something. And so if somebody had a behavior that they didn't agree with, or they could see that there was an unhealthy behavior, they didn't run into judging it and being angry with that person. They would set a boundary around it. There's no doubt. But they were more curious about, well, why would that person see it that way? Why would that person do it like that? It didn't mean that they changed the boundaries, but they had more than empathy. They had a desire to understand. Well, maybe that is part of empathy.
I don't think you can really have one without the other.
Yeah. They really, truly had a desire to say, okay, this person's had a different experience than us. That's why they're making those decisions or behaving in that way. That's not okay. We'll figure out how to handle it. We'll figure out how to be a team and how to problem solve it. We'll support each other and we'll raise our children to support each other. We'll raise our children to know that if they have integrity, that if they're coming with honesty, that if they're coming with a desire to seek to understand, with curiosity, to learn to be educated, we got their back. We got their back. And then we will teach all of them to do the same. So Lua then has done the very same thing in that she picks partners that are going to be a part of that team. And that's how they raise their children. And I said, Jesus, she found three men to do that? That was my first thought. Oh my God. But then, I mean, I understand there could be men listening to this going, she found three women to do that? Like, I understand that it could go both ways. Mm-hmm. But that was my thinking at the time. And he said to me, yeah, now tell her all of that because I really want to describe the family that she thinks I didn't grow up in because I never made it to the family in terms of being a human being. But I certainly know about my soul family. I certainly know about how my parents behaved with each other. And then from that place, raise their children. So there wasn't a conflict. Like, we're going to raise our kids one way, but the two of us don't function the same way. They saw this continuum, right? This consistency. Lewis' brother says, I see all of her charts, books of them. And I said, well, what would be in that? Because I can tell her that. But if she's someone who's been educating herself a whole life, she may have a lot of books with a lot of charts, and that may mean nothing. So what do you mean? And he goes, oh, come here. He goes, take a look at the things that she puts in the particular books I'm talking about. So she has all kinds of charting systems. And he shows me like one kind would be for her physical health. Then he shows me another book would be a charting system where she discusses things with her partner that they're working on together. Then she shows me like another book where her husband and her both write in it about their children. So it's like each of them have these, they have a collective journal on each of their children and on each of their grandchildren. Isn't that incredible? Mm-hmm. And they write in the book all different types of ways in that particular one. They write to each other about what they see in that child so that they can remind each other, oh yeah, or they can read it. The other one's busy. They go and look at the book and it'll say they've had this kind of a day. They've had this kind of a week. This is what they've confided in me. This is confidential. You can't bring this up. But it's important that you know they're going through this. So I'm telling you they are, but it's confidential. So that boundary is kept. The other parent isn't going to breach that. So this little journal is full of so many things, Kelly. I probably couldn't see in the entirety of what was in it, but he gave enough to me that her eyes just about fell out of her head. And when I told her about the journal, she flat out said to me, how the heck could a person who was a stillbirth possibly know about our journals?
Again, it blows my mind what people fixate on that they should or shouldn't be able to do as souls.
Yeah.
They should be able to know that I have blue eyes and brown hair, but how would they know I have a green journal? And that I write in it.
And what I write in it.
Yeah. Of course they should know my thoughts and feelings about how our parents raised us, but how could they possibly see inside a journal and what I've written? Like, I'm laughing in a delighted kind of way that this is just funny how humans think.
Well, Kelly, and I'm one of them. Like, clearly, I'm still one of those people too, because I'm still blown away by it all the time. So while I can be like you and think, isn't that interesting as to what kind of really sits with somebody that flips a switch finally and they go, holy shit, and they finally believe it. Mm-hmm. They're finally blown away. But I think I do the very same thing when I'm channeling for other people and my own mind gets blown like, holy shit. I think I have the very same moments.
It's neat. I think that helps me understand how people can so easily forget about oneness.
Yes.
Right? Because so many of us, I know that term kind of became a cliche at one point, still a true thing. Like, if we really believe that all things are interconnected and everything mm-hmm. is energy and once was a part of all of the same source of energy, we can so easily forget that anything is possible and all connections are possible, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. So good to know that even you forget about oneness.
I certainly
you
do.
You dumb fuck.
It's so fair though. And I don't know, you know, like sometimes I sit there and I think I could think in my ego that I'm a spiritual person. I could, but then this kind of a moment where I'm blown away that he's reading her journal and that I'm capable of understanding what was in that journal and that he's showing it to me. So I'm reading it and then I'm conveying that to the human. That blows me away. So these gifts blow me away. But then when you word it in the sense of this oneness, then I think, oh my God, Karen, talk about your own ass being served on a platter to you by your daughter today.
And I also want to say there's a difference between being blown away and delighting. Right?
Oh, because, yeah.
Like, when people say I'm blown away, you can mean it in I am so delighted to remember that this is possible.
Yes.
Then there can be the blown away of, oh my God, how could that possibly be?
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm in the delight category of being blown away by the gifts.
Yes.
It's never lost on me that all of that's doable. So I'm like, how did you forget that?
Oh, yes. Okay, and I am still in both. And I don't know, Kelly, if that has to do with the fact that I'm older. Or wait. If that has to do with the fact I'm trying to defend myself, I think.
Really weak defense, but go ahead.
That I had more religious stuff ingrained in me from birth. And some of that is some of the residual stuff that comes in. If it's just that I'm a lazy ass and I haven't worked hard enough.
See.
To change some of those beliefs. I think it could be a combination of things. And, you know, the people listening might make their own assumptions. And there could be other assumptions than what you and I are even saying that might not dawn on us.
Totally. And I'm judging you with a much harsher light than I ever would a client. Because
you're my mother.
Well, and you have all these gifts and you've been practicing them for decades, right? So yeah. It's like, hello, Karen.
Yeah.
Now, when I look at someone like Lua, I'm saying it fascinates me what people are like, well, of course he should be able to come through and talk to me and tell me what I look like and what my parents are like. It's fascinating to me that she wouldn't then think that he could read a diary. But then I think, okay, like I can have the empathy for the clients who don't live in this kind of a world every day, because I think very much we have creativity beaten out of us. So we get into a lane of thinking, okay, a medium can channel a dead person. A dead person can talk about X, Y, and Z, but not A, B, and C. Yeah. And then A, B, and C happen and you're like, oh my God, oh my God. Of course, right? We didn't have the creativity in our minds to think, well, if my stillbirth brother can come through and tell me this, what else is possible?
Right? Yeah, you're really making me think, Kelly, because...
Oh, interesting, because you said that's what was going to happen in this episode, so I'm thrilled that we're delivering.
You're such a smart ass.
It was a lot kinder than what I thought you were about to say, so thank you.
I think that's really cool, because then I think about clients calling and saying, okay, tell me what's on page 15 of my mom's journal, number 6.
And some of those people are calling because they need answers and help. And some of those people are calling and saying that thing because they're being dicks, right? And they just want to like prove or make you hit a roadblock too.
Yes. And then when I believe in the oneness, and of course that this is happening, then I think of, and I get nervous that there will be the client that calls one day and says, well, you said on this podcast on January 16th or whatever the date is when this airs, that you read this person's journal and that you were able to describe everything in the journal. So you should be able to do this for me. So read what was on his will. And I am asked that.
And that makes total sense. And I think that I would probably be someone who would call and be like, hey, I heard you could do this. Can you do it for me?
Yeah.
Which is a totally fair request. And then we have to remember that, but we weren't the bosses who were in charge of what we were allowed to know or allowed to say. So if the guides look at us and go, no. Right? We're like, oh, sorry. We're just the messenger.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't get to make the decision as to whether or not I'm allowed to.
Yeah.
They tell me if I'm allowed to.
Yeah, because in the same week, I know this for a certainty, and within the same week as Lua's session, another client had seen me that week and asked me to read her uncle's will.
Yeah, why not?
He passed away in Italy. It didn't come down the pipes the way that he said and promised his niece how she was going to be the sole beneficiary of that will. And she got not a penny, not a penny. And she took her aunt to court and lost. So she also lost all of the legal fees to fight for what her uncle had verbally promised her. And then she said, please read the will. Is there a second will? Did my aunt write like another will? And that's the one that went to court. Well, it turns out that yes, her aunt wrote another will.
It was a juicy episode.
Yeah, she did. And she had him sign it when he was dying. And she had her children witness it. Oh, yes. And so then she wanted me to read the original will. And I had to ask the guides how much of that will I could read. Well, they would only let me read a small portion of it, but I wasn't allowed to read the entire thing or tell her where it was and so on and so on. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't able to do all of the things that she wanted. And I guess that's the piece of me that is always like, well, let's see what I can do and what I can't do.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a great example of like an injustice, right? Where as humans, and I'll speak for you, you can correct me if I'm wrong. Like as humans, I would love to be able to right that wrong.
Yes.
By accessing and giving that information, because injustices are awful.
Yeah.
And even with a pure of heart desire to do that, we also understand that there are soul contracts about how lives are supposed to play out. Not that this person deserved it. Not that this person wrote this into their contract. Not that it's fair on mm-hmm. any level. But that we can't actually control anything, any outcomes, just because we think it's the right thing, right? Or the fair thing. So mm-hmm. like that's part of the frustration of a lot of these gifts is, well, if I can access something as beautifully insignificant but heartwarming as a journal entry mm-hmm. that was about loving a kid, how come I can't give this really what feels necessary thing mm-hmm. to this individual to help their life, right?
Yeah.
Same reason why we ask why, you know, good people get cancer and die.
Yes. Yes.
It's the hard parts of life. This went in a very different direction than I anticipated.
Yeah, yeah, because of our own conversation. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so where do we go back to?
We go back to Lua. We go back to her brother, who was telling her about her personality. And I want to say another thing that he said, actually. He told Lua that the way that she raised her children, who are all adults now, was treating them all equally. So I want to explain this. She treats them all equally in that she loves them all equally, respects them all equally. They can have their own religions, which they have. Her children have left the religion she's in to join spouses in their own religions. And then she welcomes their family and their children, so her grandchildren, into her family and embraces their celebrations, embraces their beliefs, and tries to educate herself as much as she can about their beliefs so that she's not crossing those boundaries or being offensive, even though it's outside of her own belief systems. So there's this equality and desire to know and love them for who they are. Mm-hmm. So if she has Jewish grandchildren, she'll go to their celebrations and be part of what they're experiencing in life, even though she's of a completely different religion.
You know what? I was standing in Pet Value on the weekend.
Another segue?
Yeah. And Teo wanted to show me the fish tanks. Like I'd never seen fish tanks before. And there's two types of fish in many of the tanks. So they write down the names of the specimens that are in these tanks, right?
That can get along?
Well, this was the thing, is he goes, I think these ones eat these ones. And I said to him, well, nobody. I said, they display them so that people will come by them. So these people who work here have obviously researched and put in these tanks fish that can coexist together.
Yeah.
They wouldn't put two fish in a tank that would annihilate the other. Right. And I sat there and thought, huh. We got put on this planet with all of these different creatures and beings because we have the ability to coexist.
Yes, we do.
Just so many of us have chosen to be assholes.
Yes.
And decide that that can't be.
Exactly. And then we have assholes who actually make it laws.
Yeah, that we shouldn't.
And wars.
And written into dogma. yes. that we shouldn't.
And then religious structures.
And then we have Lua's mom, who's yeah. like, yes, I'll go to your bat mitzvah.
Yeah.
Yeah, come on over to my mass. Yes, let's pray to your person and then yeah. open the gift that is part of your tradition. Like, it's just, yes, let's incorporate everyone's and not let the idea that your belief would diminish mine or mine should diminish yours.
Exactly. And that's how Lua sees all of it. This is why there's so much respect mm-hmm. and why she educates herself and her partner about each of her children. So if they say, hey, mom, I'm dating this girl and she's, I don't know, well, whatever.
Yeah, because what you're doing or what she's doing here is she's not creating otherness.
That's right.
If we bothered to look at each other's similarities mm-hmm. and say, okay, what's the commonality that we all have? Mm-hmm. What are we all trying to achieve when we pray to different people? Mm-hmm. What are we all trying to achieve mm-hmm. when we sacrifice something or, you mm-hmm. know, whether it's our time or who knows what?
Like, food.
Exactly. Like, yeah. What are we trying to feel together? Right? Yeah. And that's a commonality that we're trying to experience. How can we help the other person feel yes. that without creating this otherness that instills fear?
Yeah.
Right? When you don't create otherness, we don't have the need for fear.
Exactly. And then we have, if there's no fear, we don't have to fight.
Right. It's just so not hard.
It's not hard. It's actually loving and kind and generous. And this is Lua and her husband, and that was her first two husbands, and it's their children, it's their in-laws, it's their grandchildren, step, like it's everything because it's all one thing.
I would like
thing.
An application for this family. I am looking for some more extended family.
Okay, I'm just going to say, hold up a second, that's our family.
Now.
Yes. That is our family now.
We're just in this small little unit. That's trying to branch out.
Yes.
And we're like at the beginning of it.
Yes. And we have friends in it.
Yes.
Absolutely. And it is growing, Kelly.
But I would just like an application for extension.
And we are taking applications. Okay. So then he said, so she is, what was the word he used at the beginning? I can't remember.
About what?
About Lua and how her family is. He said she is this, but she's also not. I can't remember the word.
I have focused on so many other things.
Where she sees it as equals or something.
Oh, she treats them as equals, but also
right,
not.
But also not. So now we have to go into the not. So then I told Lua that, and she was thrilled with that. And she said, this is so beautiful. He sees me. And she was like, and he knows me. She was so excited to know this. And then he says, okay, this is how she doesn't treat them. As equals. That's equally as important. She has children that are very wealthy, doing very well in life financially. And she has children that are not, that it is, they work hard, but it's always a struggle. And he says, so the way that she sees it is my husband and I have money. So we help the children that don't. So we don't give everybody equal amounts of money for birthdays. We don't give equal amounts of money in Christmas envelopes. We don't give equal amounts, and we let our children know that. So Lua and her husband went up to the children with money and said, listen, we have money, and this is the will not be equal. Mm-hmm. And not only that, we are not waiting till we're dead to help our children. We would like to live long lives. We're not holding out the money. And then you guys have to hope that when we die, that your siblings are going to get financial assistance. We're going to help our children now. You guys don't need it. So how else can we support you? Mm-hmm. Because we want to support you equally, but it doesn't have to be the same thing of equal value. Mm-hmm. So some of the other children said, oh, we could use some help with some food. Mom, if you could, you know, bake something every once in a while, we'd love that.
Convenience.
Yes. Or, oh, we don't need anything, Mom. We can afford the food. We've got to cook. We've got this. We don't need anything. And as a matter of fact, what do our siblings need? Well, they need to put kids through university or school or careers or start their own businesses. They need snow removal. They need whatever it is that they need, right? Mm-hmm. Their kids need. okay, how much is that going to cost? And so what they do is the siblings and the parents put their money together and give a gift to the siblings that need help that raises their standard of living, the education, opportunity,
and
nourishment.
I think it's worth saying, like, we can't just say that raises their standard of living without also acknowledging that it lowers their stress.
Oh, that's what I was just going to say.
Right?
You interrupted.
That's my role in the podcast, so... I don't know. It's like you forget how the podcast works in this entire episode.
Go on then.
No, I really wanted to say that because I think some people hear a very, you know, status quo definition or term, pardon me, to say standard of living. And people are like, yeah. But they don't continue to hear or feel what it means to raise someone's standard of living. We hear it and we think it's very, like, you know, a technical term, a government term, someone else's responsibility term. And then it's just like there's no connection to what it actually means when we raise someone's standard of living and how you have just increased their well-being by decreasing their stress, which means that they can show up in a more whole way for themselves, their children, their career, their community, et cetera, right? This isn't just one thing, like housing is affordable.
That's right.
And if people are listening to this and they're just like, I don't really understand the whole equal but not equal thing, like, let's take money off the table for a second and think about having two children at the table. If you have a kid who is 100 pounds soaking wet at, you know, 11 years old, and I don't even know if that's crazy or not, but then you've got a 15-year-old who is now 160 pounds and is working out and has the appetite of a fucking quarterback, you don't sit down and give them the same portion and say, I love my children equally. Mm-hmm. That's not loving your children. Mm-hmm. That is over-delivering to the kid who's 100 pounds soaking wet and doesn't need what he's been given. Mm-hmm. And then you're depriving the one that actually has more need. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I think people get into money and just think, well, more is always better. And there's a scarcity feeling of like, well, you can never really have enough because you want to have savings, right?
Oh, absolutely.
When we think about food and we think about going hungry, if we don't have enough before the next meal, we can start to understand how a kid would actually need to literally be fed, have a need met, right?
Oh, I've seen this on Facebook lately, Kelly.
Yeah, where they're standing at a fence with boxes.
I saw that, but I also saw a guy going around interviewing people saying, how much do you think it would cost to retire in Canada? And I thought, what the fuck is that? And the people are coming back going, oh, I think 500,000. Oh, I think 100,000. 1 million. 10 million. 1 billion. And so you hear people's answers, but then he doesn't do anything with that. That's all he's doing. That's all he's asking. And the clip ends. And then I sat there and I listened to that and I thought, okay, what is the purpose in asking that question, and what's really motivating that kind of a YouTube, what do you call it, reel, video? And I got to thinking about how that's perfect for instilling fear in people that they'll never have enough money to retire in Canada. So is the person who said 100,000 right? Well, no, they look stupid because they said such a small amount. And that person, by the way, was like maybe 16. And then as you see, 16 years old, and then you see the people that actually give the answer, you know, 1 million, 30 million or whatever, they're older people. So it's like, oh, well, I better take their answer because at an older age, they must know what it is. So now if I buy into that, then even if I have 1 million in the bank or 500,000, I can't share with anybody. I've got to keep saving my money for me. It to me, that kind of video is purposeful in creating fear in people that I'll never have enough. Therefore, I can't share. Therefore, I can't take care of others. And again, it's the what you said earlier about other instead of the cohesiveness of the oneness. That we need to take care of each other.
Mm-hmm. So if you think about that 11-year-old kid looking down, seeing the same portion as the 15-year-old and going, I only need one of these or two of these. Here you go. mm-hmm. this will help you because I don't need it, mm-hmm. then we can actually foster the community, the we, the collaborative or cohesive, mm-hmm. instead of creating fear from a very young age. Mm-hmm. Okay, back to your story.
Oh, so Lua's brother describes how the entire family comes together to see each person's needs and evaluates and says, so what does our niece, you know, so-and-so, Mary, for example, what does she need? Or, you know, what activities is she doing? Is she looking to go to school? Is she looking, like, what are her hobbies? And what does she want out of life? So the group then can evaluate what Mary needs and decide, do the parents need help with that? And if they do, well, here are the funds. We can make that happen for Mary. And we just give the money to the parents. And Mary gets to do what she wants or what she needs or whatever the family can provide. So I described that to Lua and she said, that is correct. And then her brother says to me, and that's exactly what our parents did for us. So she's taking this and she's doing this with her own children. And then the children are doing it for the nieces and nephews. And this is generational love, family, support, healing, whatever you want to call it. He said, so I just want to point out that this is my whole family and I'm so proud of them. And he goes, I'm just so proud. He goes, please tell her all of this because this is our family unit. I'm part of it. And I'm still trying to say that I'm still part of it. Yes, I didn't come to Earth, but I'm trying to say and show her how much I know how everybody thinks and behaves, the belief systems, the actions people take, all of it.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to talk about something a little different. I don't know how to frame this. I have a friend who also lost a child to stillbirth, and she's got four children here on Earth since like all of this has happened. And they're very much like this. They're very much this type of family who has money, who makes sure that, mm-hmm. you know, others can have as well. Mm-hmm. Very, very generous, very conscientious, and they're raising their children this way. And you can see it in the way the siblings love each other. They're all under, I think, 12 years old. And they're so warm and caring, right? Mm-hmm. They still make room at the table for Charlotte to stillbirth. Oh, they still have a stocking for Charlotte. They still have blankets for Charlotte if all the kids get blankets. And it's not true of everything that they do, but for the big moments in a family's traditions, Charlotte is included. And I absolutely love this because you're talking about, you know, this being a Charlotte, channeling all of these different things. Right. And I think this is so important to remember because it becomes a way of living, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I think that is a value that a lot of people don't consider, mm-hmm. miss out on, maybe don't think is significant, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. These are all moments that give back to the parents to honor their experience and their grief when they acknowledge this other being that was a part of their family. Mm-hmm. And I think it consistently reminds us that life is bigger than us. It takes us outside of ourselves to consider others.
Mm-hmm. Mm, that leads beautifully into the last thing that he said about Lua. He said that the way that he wanted to close her session was to describe her desire to always understand somebody from their point of view as opposed to judging them first. So she sought to see their perspective and that all of her children, all of the family approach life in that way. And that it what his comment was, it makes forgiveness easier. And it doesn't mean that you let boundaries be crossed. It just means that forgiveness is easier to get to if you actually can understand where somebody is sitting and why they've done something from their perspective. Even if it's unhealthy in what they've done, just understanding it a little bit better is a little easier in your own heart. So then to wrap up her session, Lua says to me, okay, She says, I'm just need a minute and I'm going to go through my list. So she was down looking at her paper again. And then she came up and she says, okay, she says, I booked a solid hour so that I could get through my list. And she says, I haven't even started to ask questions. And she says, and I actually don't need to. She said, you have gone through and ticked things off. And she says, but I want to say something. She says, I put things down on my list like that I wanted something that was factual. She says, but I also put down on my list that I wanted to know if he knew what I thought, if he knew the actions that I had taken, if he knew what motivated me, if he knew the principles that I lived by. She says, because that's my character. She says, this is how I see life. So she says, I literally had made a little checklist if he was going to actually show up to be able to give me clues. And she says, I had no idea how you would ever be able to check these things off on a list. But I was sitting here in my mind trying to see in some way if I could correlate that you might share something or say he said something where I could make it fit. And she goes, I have to tell you, it was so easy to be able to tick these things off because of the way and the messages and the way that you said them to me. She said, it was absolutely extraordinary for me to sit here and think that these were the things, these were my needs. This was how I was going to try and approach this session. Not, I just want Karen to prove it. I want to see if he's meeting these types of needs about my character. And she says, he did it beautifully. So what I'm taking away from this, Karen, is that the oneness is real. She says it is, and the fact that we are far more than human being is real. And the fact that when we pass away, they're not far away from us. There's no way they can be far away and know all of this. And I wrote that down. I wanted to know if the oneness was real. I wanted to know if they were far away, like some religions say, or if they actually are present in our current lives. Because it made no sense to me that they could be happy on the other side and not be part of our lives. Mm-hmm. Given the way I live my life, I would never be happy being far from my family. So she says it makes no sense to me for the religions that teach that. They don't all teach it.
It does if you're also teaching them that hell exists and right. that most of the people in there, practicing or not, are going there anyway.
Right.
If they slip up once.
Right. Or the punish. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So she says, I wanted to know what was real. And she said, so I was literally questioning some of the religious beliefs that I've been taught or that some of my family members believe in life.
And we know she's been exposed to many.
Yes. And she says, so I'm literally trying to see, hey, because my daughter-in-law and my son believe this now, like how can I, do I find evidence that that holds to be true? Or do I find evidence through this experience with you that puts a hole in that belief? And does it see?
Nope. Just exposes the hole in the belief. Doesn't put a hole there. It goes, hey, oh, yes. You're Swiss cheese.
Right. Thanks. Yeah. Thank you for rewording it. Mm-hmm. I love that. Thank you. So she says, I'm very grateful for this because it has also challenged some of the beliefs. It's affirmed my questioning some of the beliefs. And it's just allowed me to sort of maybe leave this session today and reevaluate the way some of my family does have hold on to certain beliefs in their own religions. And now that I have this as evidence in my life, how can I go forward and still support them and still hold my beliefs? So she just thanked me at the very end for that whole experience.
Amazing. I still want an application. Thank you for listening to Coffee with the Sarlows. If you enjoyed the show today, please be sure to subscribe on your podcast platform and leave a review. New shows will air every other Saturday.